Welcome back to Word and Table, a weekly podcast on liturgy, sacraments, and the great tradition of Christian worship, and why it is vital in our world today. I'm your host, Alex Wilgus, and I'm here, as always, with Father Stephen Gauthier. Welcome back, Father Stephen.
Great to be back.
Father Stephen is the canon theologian of the Diocese of the Upper Midwest in the Anglican Church in North America, and he is director of formation at St. Paul's House of Formation in the Greenhouse Movement. Father Stephen, I wanted to talk today about a topic that is relevant to yours and my particular career choice, or if you want to call it that, as priests, and before that as deacons. It is, what do you need to know in order to be ordained? What knowledge is required for ordination, either to the diaconate or to the priesthood? I assume you're of the opinion that you can't just kind of, you know, come in, not do any homework and come in on day one and just sort of fake it till you make it, right?
No. People have to be fully equipped.
Okay, great. Good. I didn't do that, by the way. I'm just...
Not at all.
So let's talk about what knowledge is required before going into ordination, and how does that work in especially in the ACNA or even in our own diocese as well? What do we require that people know?
Well, first of all, the Anglican Church in North America is governed by something called our constitutions and canons. And the Constitution is what would be like the U.S. Constitution for the Church, and the canons are like statutes. You know, they're sure. Specific legislation. And we actually, and you can find those are available at the ACNA website, and they apply to all dioceses. Any ACNA diocese is subject to those requirements. And you'll actually find the requirements are found in Title III for deacon. What does a deacon need to know? The knowledge requirements that have to be demonstrated knowledge, are found in what's called Title III, Canon III, Section 1. Mm. And for priests, it's Title III, Canon 4, Section 2. Will tell us exactly what does a deacon need to know, what does a priest need to know in order to be ordained in any diocese of the Anglican Church in North America.
Okay. So what does that say?
Well, when it comes to deacons, we make a big distinction between deacons and priests. They talk about deacons are required to demonstrate, typically through ordination exams, appropriate knowledge. And they have four things. First of all, the scriptures. You know, so they basically, it's a big deal. I mean, the deacons need to know the Bible mm-hmm. and demonstrate that they have a knowledge of the Bible. They also have to, their knowledge of Anglican doctrine. How do we interpret the Bible? You know, they have to know what do we believe. Anglican discipline. How do we do church together as Anglicans? You know, basic knowledge of Anglican discipline, how we do church. And Anglican worship, because deacons can lead the public services of the church. And so how to lead public worship with the Book of Common Prayer. So that's the basic appropriate knowledge for a deacon for each one of those things. The scripture, our doctrine from scripture, our discipline within the church, and how we to lead worship.
Sure. So with the we'll get into some of this in a little bit more detail with regards to priests as well. But I wanted to ask also for deacons, when you say, you know, have to have appropriate knowledge of Holy Scripture, what are we talking about? Are we talking about memory verses or kind of the sweep of Scripture or what?
The sweep of Scripture.
Okay.
I mean, basically to be very much at home in the Bible.
Okay. Got it. All right. So that's deacons. Let's talk about priests. Are things, do we increase their requirements somewhat there?
Yeah, we basically have a broader range of knowledge required and a broader depth and a deeper depth, you know, a greater depth of knowledge okay. that's required. Because it's seeing the deacons will be assisting the priest, but, you know, they can go to the priest, but the priest has to be the one who can primarily have ultimately what's needed.
Okay. So with regards to scripture, what's the kind of higher level that priests need to be sure to be at?
Well, we're told that, first of all, we have to deal with the contents, and also not just what's in scripture, knowing, being familiar with the Bible, but how the Bible is organized, how it's, you know, and the various literary genres. Remember, we have talk about interpretive methods, is, you know, how we interpret verses depend on, you know, what kind of, how they're written, you know, something written in the prophetic works, you know, have, or something in the apocalyptic works and things. There's a way we read this, And so we have to learn more than just reading the Bible, but basically the organization of how the Bible is all put together and the various genres that we find in the Bible, the different types of writing we find in the Bible.
Yeah.
Historical background, both of Bible history, a real knowledge of the background Bible history. So many of these things talk about, the books of the Bible talk about events and things going on that mean a lot more if we know what those events are. And again, the historical background of the Bible itself, its formation. We understand that the Jewish, you know, the Jewish Bible divided into the law, the prophets, the writings, that kind of thing, how that becomes a different arrangement we use based on the Greek Bible and the like. And then how do we actually interpret? We've had a special episode on how Anglicans interpret the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, we have six principles of how we interpret the scripture. So how do we actually apply? What are those principles and how do we apply them? So again, we have to know what's in scripture and also the different types of literary genres we run into scripture. We have to know what's the background both of the Bible itself, but also the history, Bible history, you know, that background. And we have to know, again, how to interpret the Bible in the sense of, you know, the basic principles we take that have been set forth by the church.
Okay, got it. So I, when I took my my exams with you, actually,
yes,
I couldn't just, you know, do some memory verses. I also had to know about the church. I had to know about what came after the Bible as well. So what's the knowledge requirement there?
Right, because the church is very much the story of Acts of the Apostles was the work of Jesus. Jesus continues to work in his church. So we look at the church has a story from the very beginning. So we focus on general church history, meaning the entire Christian church throughout time, but also in particular on Anglican church history. You know, within our particular corner, it's like you take American history, let's say in school, but you also might take something about the history of your state. A lot of states have a requirement you take a little bit of state history.
Oh, yeah. I had to do two full years of Texas history. And I remember asking my wife when she took, you know, her, she's from Connecticut, when she took Connecticut history. And she's like, what are you talking about? We didn't have Connecticut history. Also, you had Texas history. You guys are the most self-absorbed people in the United States. But anyway.
But our history helps the context of, you know, Cicero famously said, not to know what happened before you were born is always to remain a child.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Is we to understand Anglicanism, we have to understand our story, and a story that goes all the way back to the early church. It didn't start in the 16th century. To understand Anglicanism, to understand the church in England across time. So that's to understand really what Anglicanism is, we need to know the where it comes from.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. So let's talk also about doctrine in the diaconal preparation. We talked about how we interpret the Bible. But what's the specific content of that when it comes to, knowledge required for priestly ordination?
Well, first of all, we, talk about the creeds. I mean, we are a creedal church rather than a confessional church. That means we consider the foundation of what we believe is to be found in how the church has read scripture together, which is articulated in the three great creeds, the baptismal creed, the Apostles' Creed, the Nicene Creed, and the Athanasian Creed. So those creeds, we're expected a priest is expected to know, not to know the what we believe, what those creeds say we believe, and why we believe it. Why is it founded in scriptures? Creeds are only valuable because they basically articulate scripture in what we find in scripture.
Yeah.
We also, from the earliest prayer books, have had a catechism, and so we learn the catechism. We have a fine ACNA catechism. And also the 39 articles of religion, which is a subject of a separate episode that we had. That goes back a long way in the church,
right.
Of course, the 39 articles of religion, which are, again, it's not a statement of faith. We believe those things, of course. It's basically saying these are arguments, these are how we apply Anglicanism to a number of topics that were disputed, particularly at the time of the Reformation.
Right, right.
So it's not meant to be a comprehensive rehearsal of what we believe. It's meant to be, here is the specific, how we've taken our Anglican approach to these specific issues.
Sure. So it's the creeds, the catechism, and the 39 articles.
The 39 articles.
Got it. So also, you know, we're a liturgical church, and there's, you know, as we've talked about in several other episodes. There's a lot of specific ways in which we perform our public worship, you know. So liturgics would be the subject and the study of those. And this is an interesting one, Father Stephen, because there's a great deal of there is actually some diversity, you know, especially between high and low church, when it comes to how what our Anglican liturgics are. So what are the basic requirements for ordination as set out by the ACNA as far as what you need to know liturgically as a priest?
Well, we need to know what's in the Book of Common Prayer. I mean, basically the Book of Common Prayer, you know, what are its contents? And that includes rubrics, which tell us specifically how to use it. It'll tell, here's the really basic of how we conduct the service. Mm-hmm. Now, other things beyond that, whether we're lower church or higher church, are matters of style. But there are certain basic things of, here's how morning prayer is accomplished. This is how it's done. So we have to learn what's in the Book of Common Prayer. Everything is a treasure of material in the Book of Common Prayer. Yeah. It's really a treasure house. You know, how do we actually use the Book of Common Prayer to lead services of the church? And finally, we're specifically told, as a priest, know the proper use of church music. Hmm. And that would be not that you're a musician, but to understand what is the role that music actually plays in the liturgy and what the role of choirs and things, for example, play in the liturgy.
Hmm. For our listeners, what is that role exactly? Is there a general statement of that?
Well, the choirs are not meant to are actually meant to empower the congregation rather than replace it.
Okay, I see. Yeah.
So I mean, there's, you know, sometimes it's so they can do an anthem or something, but the idea is that actually they one thing it can help with, you know, they actually help the congregation worship.
Okay.
They're not worshiping on behalf of, they're helping the congregation to worship.
Sure. Sure.
And also we talk about how, you know, how we can tie the music to the themes of the liturgical year and things. But basically, how do we actually look at music as being integrated into worship instead of just being something we happen to do at the same time? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that you are faced with as a pastor, is, you know, it's not just the conducting of spiritual or ritual of liturgical services and the interpretation of the Bible. A lot of people want to come to you and ask you, well, you know, I have this certain situation in my life. What do I do? What's the right thing to do? So talk to me about what priests need to know for the moral life or how we advise people in those situations.
Well, we're required to have a knowledge of moral theology and ethics. Now, that's how it's phrased in the canons, because these are all requirements from the canons of ACNA. Mm-hmm. Actually, they mean the same thing, because moral theology, like we say, moral is basically means usage, from the Latin word for use. You know, what do people, you know, what's the right customs?
Sure.
And ethics are exactly the Greek word for the same thing. They're really two words for the same thing. They're trying to make clear people get what we mean. But it's saying, as Christians, we have a long tradition of how we go about dealing with resolving moral dilemmas. We come and say, what is the right thing to do in this situation? We've had a few episodes we've done on issues of moral theology, like formation of basic moral theology, formation of moral conscience and things. So people have to have some basics of what are the fundamental rules that we use to approach a new issue. What do I do in the situation?
Yeah, that's correct. If you're, you know, preparing for ordination or anything, I think if you go back and listen to our episodes on moral theology, it can get you a good start at least.
Yeah, like we talk, for example, just a reminder that what's necessary for an act to be moral. And we say there are three things. It has to be the right thing, done for the right reason, in the right way.
Right. Yeah.
That can be very helpful. We learn certain things. For example, the right thing is, that means, and if we break this down into formal moral theology, is by definition, bad things can never be justified. The ends never justify the means. Something can't be good if the action itself is bad. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, those kind of things. It has to be for the right reason. You know, people could do the right things for the wrong reasons. If I could give a wonderful donation to charity, but actually it's motivated by pride, I want to have something named after me, rather, then that's the sin of pride rather than the virtue of generosity. And we talk about the right way, but we have all those kind of things. How do we systematic, or how do we go about when we seem to have conflicting moral goods? There are two good things. How do we deal with that conflict? And there are rules that we use that can help us to work through those conflicts. How do we apply, we call the thesis versus hypothesis. Thesis is a general rule. Okay. The general rule is we should always tell the truth, but what happens? Hypothesis. We have the Nazi knocking on the door and saying, do you have any Jews here? How do we apply the thesis of telling the truth to the hypothesis of a situation where that would cause serious harm? So that's the kind of thesis and hypothesis. How do we actually apply this? It's like medicine. We can learn, in medical school, you learn, one of the things you learn is basic things about diseases, but how do we apply this to individual patients? That's hypothesis. Thesis is, here's what we know about medicine as a science. Hypothesis, how do I apply that information to a specific person? So moral theology is how to, first of all, learning the basic rules, you know, what are the basic principles, but also how do I deal with those in very specific situations? Very often I have a patient, if I'm a doctor, who has more than one malady. You know, they're diabetic, but they also have spleen issues or something. And so it's not, I can't just isolate them. How do I deal with those? What if a medicine for one is going to hurt the other? How do I deal with that? That's moral theology and ethics.
Great. So there's another area I think that is often brought up when it comes to pastors, and I mean not just pastors, but it's maybe spiritual disciplines is kind of the buzzword for it. But do we require anything with regards to just that general realm, you know, of spiritual disciplines or personal spiritual development?
Yeah, we call it ascetical theology. Isn't that neat? Like the ascetics, ascetical theology. It's basically saying the spiritual life, and what we emphasize specifically here is basically of how that affects life as clergy. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we nourish our own spiritual lives so we can give to others, and including the personal use of the offices, because that, how do we participate in the prayer of the church individually?
Right, right. Is there any other realm of sort of, I'm not really sure what to call it, but is there any other realm of sort of on the ground theological reasoning that we require our priests to know about?
Yeah, in the ACNA canons, they call it practical theology. It's sort of a miscellaneous drawer of things that you need to know.
Okay, practical theology.
So for example, practical theology, that's what they call it. And first is the office and work of a presbyter. Basically, you have to know, what's my job? How does that relate to the bishop? How does that relate to the deacons? You know, I didn't know what do I do versus what other, how do I respect everyone's realm? How do I properly relate to my bishop? How do I properly relate to deacons with whom I'm working and things? The role of a priest or a presbyter, as we call it. Conducting, we talk about conducting public worship, the idea of, you know, in the very best sense, how do I have, you know, good public worship? You know, how to run a service and not just following the rubrics, even more than that. Principles of sermon composition and delivery. Mm-hmm. You know how to put together a sermon.
Yeah, yeah.
Basic rules on how to do that and do it well. Principles of and methods of Christian education in the parish. I'm responsible for, you know, equipping the saints. Well, how is that working for both for children and adults? How am I equipping them? We have a separate episode. We talk about catechesis. How am I catechizing? People need to grow in the faith. How am I doing this at Christian education? What are the principles? How do I know I'm covering the bases? Again, we have a separate episode in catechesis. You need to know, if you're going to be a priest, you need to know sort of the rules, like the personnel manual. You need to know the constitutions and canons, certain basic things about them that says, here's how it works, you know, how we deal with issues in the church. Every diocese has its own constitution and canons which build upon that. We need to know those. And finally, they even say sometimes sort of a training in how to read and do public speaking.
Hmm. Yeah,
you know, it's some like me. People might say, "Well, gee, this guy talks too fast." I wouldn't be inclined to disagree with that.
I'm sure no one has ever said that of you, Father Stephen.
I wish that were true.
Well, that's why we put you on here, Father Stephen, so that people can pause you. Let me see. If you're a listener, you are in control. You pause at any time and just let it sink in.
Well, the first parish where I served as a deacon, the rector of the parish said to me, this was a gift. I was a gift from God because finally someone who spoke faster than he did. Because people complain he spoke too fast.
That's great. That's great. I love that. All right, great. So is there anything else in that grab bag there?
Yeah, the last thing, the ninth item in the official canons, are the missionary work of the church, because the church is really committed to mission. The ACNA particularly has reaffirmed our commitment as Anglicans to mission, to bringing the gospel. So they say there are basically four particular things that people need to learn about, demonstrate a knowledge of. First of all, sort of the history of missions, how the gospel has in fact been passed on over the centuries. Mm-hmm. Also, basic principles of cross-cultural communication. You know, how do we make sure we can get the metal of the gospel without sort of the ore of all sorts of cultural accoutrements? How do we separate those? How do we make sure that we can present the gospel to people who come from different backgrounds?
Sure.
The principles of mission strategies, which actually have a field called missiology, you know, strategies for mission.
Yeah.
And finally, personal relational evangelism and apologetics. How do I best personally spread the gospel to people? And apologetics, how do I explain the faith, answer questions regarding the faith?
Hmm. Okay.
So all of those are specifically, everything we talked about is a requirement that we demonstrate our knowledge of these things in order to be approved, the knowledge aspect for to be approved for ordination as a priest.
Got it. Well, great. Well, there you go. If you're a listener and you're a postulant or something like that, then that can go ahead and definitely get you started. Do you have anything for us finally about knowledge required for ordination?
Yeah, something really important is very often people think, because of schooling involved and things, that ordination is primarily about knowledge. Knowledge is something you need, but that's not the primary. Ordination is a call from God. In our ordination ceremonies, we say, if you believe you've been called by God, it's a call felt by the person and discerned by the church. So ordination is not primarily, it's not like someone who says they have the knowledge becomes a priest or a deacon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's, we don't want to get it backwards, cart before the horse. It's the call which is the basis. You know, the knowledge is, once we know we have the call, is getting it to answer that call. But it's not a substitute for the call.
Yeah.
This is very different, for example, in traditional Judaism. To be a rabbi is a completely academic degree. You demonstrate knowledge. That makes you a rabbi. You can have a type of ordination to actually practice and things. But the point is, theoretically, is a rabbi simply someone who's an expert on Jewish law?
Mm-hmm.
For us, it's more than that. The knowledge does not equip one alone. And so the real problem, knowledge is vital, though, because you have to, you know... A good side, bedside matter doesn't make up for knowing medicine if you're a doctor, for example.
Sure.
You know, that we need to have certain actual skills and things. So again, the ordination exams are not really how we discern ordination, but rather how we discern that we've properly equipped people to be ordained, that they'll have everything they need to function.
Well, thanks so much, Father Stephen. Thank you for listening to Word and Table. We'll be back again next week for more on liturgy, sacrament, and the great tradition of Christian worship. Thanks for listening.